This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark and Wang Xiaoning. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Monday the 3rd of February. And actually, Xiaoning, did you realise yesterday was the 2nd of February 2020? It was a palindrome.
And was it? Oh my goodness, was there some internet sale I missed? Because it's like the 11-11-999. I can't even keep up.
I like how your first thought immediately goes to, was there an internet sale to celebrate this event that only happens, maybe is only going to happen like again in the next century?
Well, you know, there'll be somebody out there trying to think, how can I monetize this? How can I create a new thing to get people to hand over their cash in celebration of some, I don't know, name it the 222 day or something. I don't know, you know, the Pairs Day. I'm sure somebody would have thought. Now they're probably thinking, why didn't we think of it now?
I'm sure it was around somewhere, but I'm not aware of it. I just came across an article in CNN about it, about the fact that actually the only time that this palindrome effect is going to happen again is in 2121. So the 12th of December, 2121. So in over 100 years.
Okay, I won't be here anymore. I mean, even with modern science, I doubt it. Okay, so
you never
okay.
know. Never say never, Shani.
I let this date slip away without realizing the significance. Oh, no.
All right. Well, there are lots of other significant days to be celebrated. And today in particular, we're going to be looking at a number of interesting things, including after the 6:30 news, we're going to be taking a look at a somewhat unfortunate incident involving our youth and sports minister who had to apparently jump a fence to escape an unruly mob at a Friday event in Johor.
Wow, it's kind of scary, right, when you think about it.
It is quite scary.
And are you thinking twice of your holiday plans with the Wuhan virus? Well, you're not the only one. The whole of China is.
All right, and if you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 0187-89-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, though, we're going to be taking a look at life admin and how to make space for it in your life. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Philadelphia Freedom by Elton John, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin and Xiaoning. Now, do you ever find yourself somewhat overwhelmed by the sheer number of items on your to-do list? And you look at the 10, 20 items and you think, I can't do any of them, and then they just never get done. And they just roll over to the next day, and then start accumulating more as they go on. Does it sound like I'm speaking from personal experience? Because I am. Now, the BBC has an article about what they call how to reduce attention residue in your life. In other words, how to address these to-do lists in a focused manner in order to avoid having your mind split into two or three different directions. Because when that happens and you get attention residue and you wind up finding that tasks take a lot longer than they usually do. So I was kind of wondering, you know, what kind of habits or strategies do you have to get rid, to kind of get through all of these, you know, what they call life admin, you know, calling the dentist, booking an appointment with this agent, you know, making
the humdrum,
sure you do.
Right?
It's the humdrum that is never ending.
Sorry, but the humdrum will be there forever and ever, you know, and you're right. Sometimes the humdrum just feels so humdrum that you don't even want to do it because you're like, oh, you know, it's such a pain. And if I do this, then, you know, I can't contact the person. And then it will lead to some other another humdrum task. But I think this article is quite useful in that it tells you to break it down, right, at the end of the day, and don't be so overwhelmed by it. And what is funny is it's taught at university. I never had this course. Did you guys have this course? At University of Melbourne is teaching this, right?
I didn't have this course.
Isn't it like a life skill thing? Isn't it? To me, it's a life skill. Like, hey, students, get your life in order. And then, you know, one way of doing it is to have this. And as it's called exactly that, right? Get your life in order practices.
And can I interject here to say that it's got its own fancy acronym, which when I first read it, I was like, what is it? How do you say this? GYLIO? G-Y-L-I-O? It stands for Get Your Life in Order.
Yeah, I mean, there's such a fancy thing in university now. Okay, never mind. It is quite useful because I think that's when you really, as a student, especially at tertiary education, it's your first taste of adult life on your own. And yes, maybe it's overwhelming. But guess what? you still face the same problems 20 years later as an adult sometimes. In fact, it's worse because you've got to juggle not just education, I mean your classes, but when you're working, it's working life, family life, everything all bundled together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I am guilty of having these lists that never move. So there's always 19 items or 18 items. You strike one off and then another one appears. It's like the virus, it mutates. You know, it's deadly, but I like this because one thing this article taught me is to have a shared list as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought of it, you know. Then it doesn't feel so overwhelming. And maybe in a way, when you do it as a couple or as a family unit, you can delegate.
You can, yes.
Right? Rather than just take it on upon yourself and then feel so overwhelmed. And then maybe the partner realizes how much work there is. And, you know, there's a little bit more of shared responsibility. This is a fantastic idea, I think.
I think so. And overall, I'm just generally in support of breaking things down into small lists, right? So I'm very guilty of, in the typical workday, I come out of the studio after the show's over at 10 o'clock and everything kind of piles on because the first 4 hours of our working day is dedicated to being on air.
And we can't escape.
We cannot escape. No, not that we would want to escape because it's very entertaining. But it just means that there is a lot happening in that last 4 hours or effectively of our workday. So sometimes what helps me is that I sit down and I break it down into to-do lists that I can check off as I do each item because it also helps me to focus. I'm like, okay, what's next on my to-do list? To write this particular description for this particular podcast. Then I'm like, okay, this is my priority in the next 5 minutes. So don't think about anything else except that. And sometimes it's also breaking down larger tasks into smaller ones, like say starting to research this entire subject that you look at it and you think, oh my goodness, this research is going to be mammoth, it's going to take me days. But effectively what I write on my to-do list is start the research.
Okay, so it doesn't scare you.
So it doesn't scare me. Okay, spend 20 minutes researching this thing. You know, don't look at your phone because if you listen to The Morning Run long enough, you know that I have a problem with being surgically attached to my phone. Don't look at your phone. Just spend 20 minutes in completely focused research. And then the next day, I'll just write continue research. It kind of, it makes things less insurmountable. I feel.
Yeah, break it down. I mean, it's true. If you put down there, finish research, you're doomed, right? Because you really can't do it in let's say 1 hour, and then you feel you failed. And then maybe then tomorrow you won't even start on that list.
Yes.
Because you have already had that kind of defeatist attitude. But I think what one thing is, don't put too much, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we need to prioritize what needs to go on that list. And some things, it's humdrum. It can wait.
Yeah. And I've seen friends and people whom I follow, cleaning tasks, for example.
Okay, that one don't put it off because I've been to some people's houses which are really grotty.
No, but so I thought it was quite clever because they have multiple to-do lists broken down into daily cleaning tasks, weekly cleaning tasks, bi-weekly, monthly, so that it all looks, you know, very tidy and very reasonable.
Systematic.
It's very systematic because every column has maybe 5 or 6 items in it. And that looks a lot more achievable than say if you have 20 items on your list because you look at it and think, yeah, no, it's never going to happen and you just never start.
That's clever though, like put it according to time. Yeah, I think that's an excellent idea.
Do let us know what you think though. Do you have strategies for breaking down your life admin? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a few messages coming up for you and then we'll be taking a look at the impact to the tourism industry from the current Wuhan coronavirus. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Tame Impala with Feels Like We Only Go Backwards, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin and Xiaoning. Now, over this Chinese New Year week, the biggest story I think that's been on everyone's lips is the Wuhan coronavirus. Even here on BFM, we've been talking about it pretty consistently every morning because we've been looking at the impact of the coronavirus on various sectors of the economy, both here in Malaysia as well as regionally. But CNN Travel has also done an article on this over the weekend, talking about how the tourism industry in several countries is starting to really be hit, particularly as Chinese tourists now have decided to stay at home. Now, at to kick off this article, they went and spoke to a tour operator in Australia who saw 15 tours in February cancelled, and which hits him very hard, obviously, because China and Chinese tourists is one of his biggest sources of revenue.
Yeah, over the last few years, I think the Chinese have really taken to tourism, you know, in a big way. And they're the world's largest market. I mean, at the moment, they are like something like 150 million Chinese tourists in 2018. And I think from the CNN article, it says that in the 2020s, the number is expected to even double again. Because if you think about it, passport ownership in China is only 10% of the population. Mm. And that's expected to double. So whatever numbers you're seeing, just imagine twice that. So, you know, everyone's really gunning for this Chinese market. Also because they so happen to be the world's largest spender. They spent $277 billion of this total 1.7 trillion international tourist market. And they are also, they haven't traveled very much, right? It's kind of just opened up in the last 10 years. So you can imagine every country, including us, we're gunning for these Chinese tourists. I mean, that's a lot of expectations that they were supposed to come for Visit Malaysia here. So they're definitely going to have an impact on tourism here in Asia, Europe, America, everywhere. Because honestly, I've been to some far-flung places and you see Chinese there now.
Yes, and we were expecting about 3.5 million Chinese tourists in 2020. Thailand was expecting something like, what, 11?
11, and now they've cut it down to 9 million. And they are also the largest spenders in Thailand, largest spending group in Thailand.
Australia last year in total welcomed 9.4 million visitors in 2019, and nearly 8 million of those were tourists from China, and they did contribute $22 billion in spending to the Australian economy. So that gives you some sense of the magnitude of the tourism arrivals that we're talking about, because it does also quite boggle the mind, you know, the fact that Chinese passport ownership is only at 10% and that only in this year it is expected to double to 20%. So you can imagine that tourism arrivals, if not for the Wuhan coronavirus, would probably have continued this almost this
tourism boom.
Serious, yeah. Upward trajectory.
It was. I mean, if you go to places like Thailand, for example, I mean, they account for like 30% of all tourist arrivals. And the fallout apparently is already being felt. So their president of Association of Thai Travel Agents already said that the number of cancellations in the month for February and March have been significant. And I think we're going to see this increasingly, because I don't know about you, but even in my conversations with friends and family, everyone who has got travel plans in the next 1-2 months are seriously thinking, should we go? And we're not even in China, right? Because
yes.
China is kind of having, more and more cities are actually having this lockdown. And added to it, let's be honest, a lot of countries don't want Chinese tourists anymore.
Yes, and so the xenophobia has started to set in. And you're starting to see stories as well on social media of people, particularly in Western countries, some of them Malaysians, who suddenly are able to find seats on very crowded trains, or if they're walking through a crowded platform, have a kind of arm's length distance between them and everyone else, because everyone is afraid. And they look at you, and if you look remotely Chinese, then you are automatically a suspect. Right. And that is very unfortunate, because this is tourism, and tourism is not the only reason that people travel to other countries. You can be in another country, you can have not been to China in 12 years, and yet you are still the source of suspicion. So this is, we also did speak to Yap Lip Seng of the Malaysian Association of Hotels recently here on the Morning Run. And he was talking about the fact that even here in Malaysia, we have started to see hotels
cancellations?
Yes, experiencing cancellations all the way for bookings into February. So the concern is then that if these February cancellations are starting to be affected, and if the coronavirus doesn't die down in, say, the next week, you'll start to see March numbers affected. And then where will we be? Because we have our tourism ministry has refused to change our target for tourism, for Chinese tourist arrivals, or even for tourist arrivals in general. So we still expect 3.5 million, but that 3.5 million was expected before we lost the first quarter of the year to this travel anxiety.
Of course, and it's not going to be helped that actually a lot of airlines are already cancelling flights to China. So British Airways is one, American Airlines is one. So, of course, you've got countries now not allowing Chinese to come in, and now you have airlines not flying to China at all. So definitely the impact on the global tourism market is probably going to be felt quite significantly. But the good news is that if the Wuhan virus is contained, and if we use SARS as an example, hopefully a rebound will be very sharp and there'll be recovery in this space.
Well, do let us know what you think. Do you think that we'll be seeing a tourism recovery in the first half of 2020? Let us know. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are about to head into the 6:30 news. But first, here's Valerie by Steve Winwood, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Revelry by Kings of Leon. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Shaoning. Now, on Friday night, there was an incident Bersatu Johor Bahru meeting in which our youth and sports minister Syed Saddiq Syed Abdul Rahman came face to face with what appeared to be a group of about 200 people, a crowd who heckled him and asked him to leave the state, and eventually led to Syed Saddiq and a number of other Bersatu leaders having to jump a fence in order to avoid the ongoing crowd. And this is something that has carried through the weekend, because Syed Saddiq subsequently came out to say that the crowd was linked to UMNO. UMNO rebutted it. I think there's a police report being lodged. And it's basically, it's kind of blown up over
the weekend. Did you see the video?
I didn't see the video. I've seen the images caught of Syed Saddiq actually scaling the fence.
Oh, I didn't see him scaling the fence, but I did see these supposed alleged gate crashers kind of taunting him or, you know, shouting. And you know what's really scary is that he was with his parents.
Yes, so he was with his parents and a number of other Bersatu leaders. I think there were two or three of them. And the small group had to essentially take what they call the Jalan Tikus. So
yeah,
the tiny little roads, pathways through the forest in order to escape.
This is a bit ridiculous. This is Malaysia 2020, right? I mean, you should be able to go and come as you please without fear of a group of people trying to like gate crash and create a ruckus. And I saw the videos. I can imagine if you were there and it's a group of, let's say, five or six of y'all versus a group of these boys. They were mainly all boys shouting, and they look like a bit like a mob. I would be frightened.
I mean, yeah, if it's five or six of you versus about 200 people, I mean, there is no way that the mathematics of that would come out in your favor. Let's put it that way.
So you would be very scared, right? And they did sound, I would say, from my observation, a little threatening. So I think I'm not surprised that Syed Saddiq and his, and the group, including his parents, just decided to kind of leave.
So there has been criticism, actually, as well, of Syed Saddiq for taking what some people termed the coward's way out by jumping the fence and running away from the gathering. The problem I have with that is Syed Saddiq, I mean, there was nothing to be gained from confronting the crowd.
No, there were 200 of them.
200 of them, you know, and how would you go about de-escalating that situation? Crowd mob mentalities are a real thing. And Syed Saddiq did speak to the organisers and the police who were present at the gathering for safety purposes to see what was the best way to go about it. And they told them to just leave the gathering. The problem was, of course, that this group of 200 people was blocking the only exit.
No, but it's ridiculous, because now I'm reading another Malaysian Kini article, and it says, okay, who was at this? It was actually at a restaurant, right? Or some sort of gathering. And it was together with members from the youth, women and division wings, as well as their families. So it wasn't just Syed Saddiq and his parents, but there were other Bersatu members with families, I presume, children.
Mm-hmm.
Who are these? I mean, this is scary.
So whatever beef you have with someone's politics, I don't think that it should ever come to this, that you should gather together a group of people and essentially confront someone at a gathering that is meant to be peaceful and pose a threat. Because no matter what, you know, you can say that no blows were thrown, no explicit threats were made, but it's just fact when you have a group of people coming gate crashing a party to shout threats and heckle the attendees of the gathering, then it becomes a possible security issue. And it is awful that this is happening in 2020, because what you know, we've seen so much a democratic change happen over the past 2-3 years. Why is it we still can't disagree with each other in a civil manner? Why must it always come to threats or blows?
Yeah, I agree. You have the right to protest. You have a right to say something if you're not happy. But you also have to be mindful of the situation and the circumstance. So in this situation, it was a restaurant. There were other families there. You do not need to sound threatening. And obviously, people were frightened. Otherwise, they wouldn't have tried to flee the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just a bunch of people putting up placards and maybe shouting a few calm lines. But this, when I saw the video, I was quite nervous. If I was in the crowd, I would be like, hey, what's going to happen? Is it going to descend into violence? And it's 200 of them, you know. So the point is, what is the police going to do now? That's my next question, right?
So
are they going to take action?
They've arrested apparently 3 people in connection with this kind of gate crashing event. But you wonder what other action is going to be taken. Yes, arrests are good, but also just, I mean, we also have to see party leaders starting to take responsibility. If, of course, then there's still a bit of an if this party of 200 people is linked to UMNO. But even then, I think that no matter who these people belong to in terms
of
allegiance or allegedly belong to, I do think it is important that all party leaders, not just from the top, but down through the ranks into the grassroots, emphasize that this is not something that we want to see. That if we want to have a mature political situation and environment where people feel able to disagree and debate one another, we cannot resort to this kind of threat.
Yes. And also, what message does it send out to the general public? That if a minister can feel scared, threatened, what about the rakyat? What about us? You know, what is the sense of safety we have? That's the other question, right? So the police have to take swift action against these 200 supposedly, I don't know, gate crashers, shall we call them that?
Mm. So do let us know what you think about this as well. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are heading into a few messages and then we'll be taking a look at social media as well as what's been said on the front pages of the newspapers. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Rosebud by US Girls, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark and Wang Shaoning. Now, thank you very much for your messages this morning. We've had a couple of social media responses to what we've been talking about this morning. Ro has weighed in on the to-do list situation and said, my to-do list normally stops at the list part, as in it takes so much effort to think of all the things I'm overdue for and list them. I'm too exhausted to do the doing bit.
So he's good at writing, or he or she is good at writing it all down, but doesn't do anything because after that, I have too much, I can't deal with it, and then just stops.
Too much
sounds
mental stress.
Sounds a bit like me.
I think we can all identify with this somewhat, because it actually really can be tiring and quite stressful. Say if you sit down and think about it, and then over the course of the 15 minutes that you're thinking about it, your to-do list balloons.
Or you run out of paper because you just keep writing and not enough lines, which has happened to me before.
Has it?
Yeah, you're like, I lamar, there's no end to this.
Yeah, so Philip Star Maria has also weighed in on the subject of Syed Saddiq and the incident that happened over in Johor on Friday.
Yeah, he says that don't our ministers have bodyguards? And, you know, he wants to know why were the crowd so angry with him and whether the authorities are going to do anything about this. Because in the past, mm-hmm. there have been arrests and then nothing. So that's why these incidences seem to repeat themselves.
Yeah, I think that is important. We need to see some kind of follow through from authorities. And like I said, I feel like we really do need to see condemnation from party leadership.
Action quickly also,
action,
right?
Quickly, exactly. Because no matter who these people belong to, whether or not they acted with the consent of their political parties, they should not have been doing this. And we should be trying to move forward into a new political environment where people can actually have conversations with each other rather than being enemies just on the basis of their political beliefs.
Yeah, I mean, there's no need to behave like a hooligan, right? And make people scared at the end of the day.
All right, and this morning also we do have the papers in front of us. So I've got the Star and the NST. So the Star has gone with Return in Progress. So this is as the Malaysian government has announced, has assured that any Malaysians stranded in Wuhan, which is the epicentre of the current coronavirus outbreak, they could return home at soonest today. So Putrajaya have said that they are ready to evacuate 132 people under strict supervision.
Well, I think that's been going around the world, right? Mm-hmm. Indonesia has done this. Even Sri Lanka's done this. UK has done this. I think, you know, every country feels like they need to get their nationals out. And it makes sense because it must be quite worrying if you're there, right? Because the whole cities, many cities have been locked down. But for the Malaysian Reserve, the front page, it's about the airlines, hotels, retailers to be badly hit by the coronavirus. I think we've been following this story throughout the whole last week. And we will continue to do it because, yes, the impact is going to be felt. Hopefully, the rebound will also be quick once the virus is contained. The other headline on the Malaysian Reserve is local authorities probe allegations against AirAsia on Airbus bribery scandal. And this is something we'll be covering at the 7 o'clock hour. It's a similar kind of headline on the Edge Financial Daily. It says the SE to review alleged US $50 million graft charges against key decision makers at AirAsia and AirAsia X.
Yeah, so the NST has also gone with the Wuhan story, the same picture, in fact, as on the front page of the Star. And I think overall it's notable that the first, I think, four or five pages of each of the kind of general papers have been dedicated to various stories about the coronavirus. Even we here have been talking about it quite consistently over the past week or so. On page four of the NST, masks still out of stock in many areas as a public anxiety over the virus continues to rise.
That's really the case because when I was doing my grocery shopping, there were a lot of pharmacies which, you know, they even put a sign outside on the door saying that they've run out of hand sanitizers.
Yes.
And masks. So I guess everybody's rushing out to buy these things because really, let's face it, it is scary and it feels like there's still a lot of unknown.
Yeah, I think it is also worth mentioning that, you know, yes, what is scary about the coronavirus is the speed of its the numbers that we're seeing coming out of China. But if you compare it to the death tolls of, say, just the normal flu also, you know, the same influenza that you work through and you can't be bothered to take sick leave for, that kills between 12 and 60,000 people a year.
Yeah, but I guess it's the headlines, right? Because you just turn to any newspaper and then you read 305 deaths, which is what sadly is the number today, and 14,558 cases confirmed worldwide. So yeah, there is this sense of nervousness, right? I mean, how many more people are going to be infected? But really, at the end of the day, I mean, even the WHO kind of reminds people, you know, the vulnerable are those who already have some sort of pre-existing condition, or maybe you're elderly or the very young. But it pays to just be careful.
Yes,
right.
Exercise reasonable precautions. Now, that is all of the news we have for you from the front pages of the papers, because we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin. And after that, we'll be bringing you the business end of the morning run. So be sure to stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, here is some music. Here is 17 by Sharon Van Etten, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.